Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or a bisexual man. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to make during the broadcast or even after the broadcast, please feel free to direct them to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Tonight I'm very excited to have back a woman who I greatly admire, who's a leader in the forefront of understanding for all of us through her books, through her words, through her newsletters, through her support groups. So welcome back, Dr. Margalis Velstad. Thank you so much for coming back and joining our show.
Well, thanks for having me, Bonnie. I always enjoy doing your show.
Well, now, you know, your books have been eye-opening and really telling for so many of the women who are in our situation. When you had your books about caretaking, narcissistic personality, and healing through all of this, and these are all wonderful guidelines. That's how I originally met you, through one of my support group members who said nothing was clear in her life until she read your book. And then all of a sudden, her whole life made sense. And that's when I first contacted you, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago when I first discovered you. And since then, you've been kind enough to be on the show several times each year, even attending our last healing weekend where women were so grateful for your appearance there and what you taught them. But now you've come up with something that's so important for us. That's one of our biggest issues. And that's in your new book, Raising Resilient Children with a Borderline or Narcissistic Parent. And boy, this is an amazing guidebook for our women. Not only our women, but specifically also for our women who are going through this in so many cases where they have to handle these situations either while they are married or while they're going through the process of divorce. Because with marriages, when you have children, you know, it's never over. You know, you're kind of stuck with that person until they're grown because, you know, it's the other parent. And it's not like they just, in most cases, walk away. And especially when they have narcissistic personalities, they many times don't want to let you out of their grip. Not that they necessarily care because they kind of lack the qualities of being an actual caring kind of parent, but just for a matter of whatever their personality problems are. So what drove you to write this particular book? I'm just curious before we talk about it.
Well, after writing the Stop Caretaking book and Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, which focused on the partner of the narcissist or borderline, I had so many questions from people about what do I do, what do I say to my kids, how do I handle raising them, because I'm stuck with this person to some extent, maybe the rest of my life. And so I joined with a good friend of mine, Jean McBride, who's a marriage and family therapist, also in Colorado, who has worked with a couple going through very high conflict divorce, and usually they're fighting over the kids. And so she and I put our heads together and came up with this book.
And did you find a lot of similar patterns with people who are with personality disorders when they're raising their children?
Well, yeah, because a personality disorder is an ongoing pattern that just doesn't go away. It's part of who the person is. And so they act towards their partner in predictable kinds of ways. They act towards their children in predictable kinds of ways.
So first thing that I'm reading when, you know, you go to the beginning of your book is something that to me is very depressing, where it's the numbers of statistics of people who have personality disorders. And you state there's approximately 15 to 19% of the population, which translates to 49 million to, you know, 62 million people that show evidence of personality disorder. And that is a lot of people. I mean, it was kind of startling to me to see the number.
Actually, it was startling to me as well. When I first started writing and researching in this area, and wrote my first book, people would ask me, oh, what's your book about? And I would start to tell them and describe a narcissist and personality, and they almost everybody said, oh, yeah, that's my Aunt Jane or my Uncle Bill or whoever. Everybody seems to have one or two people in their family that meets at least some of the criteria for this kind of personality.
What's interesting, I'm just going to read a little bit from what you state here, because this is something that we always talk about. How does this dysfunction happen? For years, it was believed that these problems were completely the result of trauma and or poor parenting. Recent research shows in Sweden that their twin registry of over 85,000 twins concludes that personality is 75% inherited. Borderline personality is 78% to 95% inherited, and narcissism is 77% inherited. You inherited most of your personality as well. You may have noticed that other members of your NPBP partner's family have many of the same traits and behaviors, because it's well known that this runs in families. So I think that's a good starting point, that people have to realize that it's not necessarily trauma in childhood that brings this out. Maybe it could intensify what's already innately in there. Would I be right to assume that?
That's correct. However, trauma for a narcissist can be anything that they just don't like or a small disappointment. They overreact to so much that happens in their lives that they often feel much more traumatized than a normal person. But yes, we tend to inherit it from parents, grandparents, And that gives a double whammy for a lot of kids, because that means they may have genetic predisposition, and then they have a parent with the same problems who reinforces that in the child.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I had a show with a therapist friend of mine also, Alexa Servadidio, a couple of weeks ago, and she brought up a point that we really hadn't covered on the show before, and maybe you could talk a little bit about it. We were talking about sometimes children will tend to gravitate towards defending their fathers, even when their fathers haven't been the good parent, and the mothers feel so rejected from this because they've done everything right. The fathers who barely did much of anything right, and the daughters are going to defend them, and they turn on their mothers. And, you know, Alexa brought up the fact that, you know, a lot of this is role modeling, that when kids are growing up and they see the father attacking the mother, that often they follow in the same pattern. And I brought up the fact that children are made up genetically of two parents, and that if a father has these traits, it's not impossible that no matter how much you love your child, that she or he is not going to have those traits as well. Do you agree with that, or do you feel there's a legitimate thought?
Well, yeah, it's a combination of nature, which is the genetic predisposition, and
mm-hmm.
then the way you are nurtured or parented, and definitely children model themselves on the behavior of the parents that they see. So it's a combination, and in our book we really talk a lot about making a very strong connection with your children, so that you become as much of the stronger role model for them, because you're willing to listen, you're willing to care, you're willing to be there for them.
Mm-hmm. You do state that, you know, you have a section called overt narcissistic parenting. And you say few people are formally diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder or borderline personality disorder, that many people exhibit strong borderline or narcissistic behaviors and traits, which include extreme emotional reactions, self-involved thinking, high need for attention, lack of empathy, controlling and devaluing of others, emotional inaccessibility, difficulty in caring for others, and impossible demands on their loved ones. And you state whether they have the real ability to love others is continually debated. However, they do have a strong need to be in attached relationships and deeply fear abandonment. This causes a pattern of wanting and seeking to be together all the time, along with a corresponding anxiety about being suffocated. So they push you away with anger and criticism. Of course, this pull-push pattern causes a great deal of emotional pain and instability in your family. And I think that really pins it on the head there. You know, certainly it did in my relationship. It was that constant push-pull. And, you know, you had to be there, but, you know, if you push away, then they're angry and they're critical. You know, so, of course, we didn't know how to label it back in those days. Yeah,
but if you get too far apart, they come back and say, oh, please take me back. I'll be good. I'll do exactly what you want. I'll be more thoughtful, et cetera, and they might be for a little while. But
uh-huh.
as soon as they get comfortable, they're going to be back to who they are. And I think that's the part that a lot of people think that these are behaviors the person has a lot of control over, but they don't. It's who they are, not just what they do.
And that's why therapy normally will not help the situation. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, that's part of the reason. Therapy also doesn't help because they won't go. Or if
mm-hmm.
they do go, they'll last maybe a couple of sessions, and then they'll get pissed off and leave.
So that's a pattern that we see in our group. But constantly, women, you know, will go with their husbands for, you know, marriage counseling. They'll go for a couple sessions, and then the therapist will say something the husband doesn't like, and the husband won't come back because he says they don't know what they're talking about. Would that be
right.
one of those situations you're talking about?
That's about 95% of what you're going to get with a narcissist going into therapy. Now, they have to believe that they're perfect and that they have no problems, and the problems and the issues are always someone else's fault. They really can't tolerate being imperfect. And at the same time, they're very, very much less than perfect because they don't really know how to do relationships.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk to people? What's the difference between an NP and a BP?
Well, primarily, people with borderline disorder are more emotionally dysregulated. They often can't control their emotions at all. They're very extreme. They have an intense fear of abandonment. They often are fairly dysfunctional in even being able to keep a job or have normal kinds of relationships. They might have one friend, for instance. For narcissistic people have a fairly well-developed ego that protects all of those same kind of feelings that are inside of them, but they can push those feelings down and come across as very charming and intellectual or, you know, happy, and they often are idealizing the world. They idealize themselves. They make a very good impression most of the time until they get someone who will partner with them and make a commitment. And the minute they make a commitment, the narcissist then takes total control of the relationship. Borderline people more often, when they get in a relationship, they more often just fall apart and they just can't function, and the partner has to do pretty much all the work in the relationship. So narcissists look very functional. They often have good jobs. They often lose their jobs because they have conflicts with people in authority. They hate being told what to do. But then they get another good job. And they're always telling you how wonderful they are. So.
And they're charming, and people fall for it because they're able to talk their way into that with that charm. You say something in your book about narcissistic family system rules, which is so true. I just have to tell people what you say about this. You say the rules in the narcissistic family system can be hard to figure out. They're convoluted, often secret, don't seem to really make sense, and may frequently contradict each other. Instead of being designed to promote healthy development and positive interactions, narcissistic family system rules, family rules are designed to protect the fragile ego and needs of the NPBP. In other words, rules and patterns are intended to keep the family system functioning despite an emotionally disturbed and disabled parent. In healthy, securely connected families, the rules are often simple. The primary rule is don't do anything to hurt yourself or others, which applies to the parents as well as the children. All other behaviors flow from that one rule. In the NFS, the primary rule is do whatever you need to do in order to keep the NPBP happy. The results in dozens of expectations and many rules for you and the children that can be difficult to follow. Here is an overview of some of the common rules and cultures. Rules only apply to the children. Adults can always break the rules. Children's needs and requests are randomly responded to, often ignored or discounted infrequently. The parents make the parents frustrated or angry. Real personal feelings are not discussed and usually denied or disconnected. Parents' needs come first. For example, children are ignored while the parents fight with each other. Appease the angry partner, break routines, try not to rock the boat. Parents expect the children to act more maturely than they do. Communication is vague, indirect, and often involves secret codes. For example, saying yes when you mean no, saying forget it when you mean to do it, expecting others to read your mind, pretending you're happy when you're really angry or depressed, talking more politely when you're really furious, advice giving when others want you to listen. You know, I read a lot of this, and I see a lot of my own life in here and the mistakes that I've made and not understanding and recognizing people who are like this. And I see the women who I work with often are in these situations. And maybe you can give some of the best strategies when you have to deal with somebody who is like this. Where do you even begin?
Well, most spouses try and begin by changing their partner, by bringing it to their attention and saying, hey, you know, this or that, I don't like how you said that, or please do this. Unfortunately, with a narcissist, they're not going to change anything. It doesn't matter how many times you ask. They might try to do it differently, but it takes so much attention and work, they just don't want to bother with it, and they go back to doing exactly what they normally do. Their whole goal in life is to protect their own secrets of who they are. And that's not just the fact that they may be gay, but it's also the fact that they really feel insecure, that they really are afraid of relationships, that they really can't share feelings, that they don't even know what feelings are. They know emotions, and they can spew those out, but a real intimate feeling, a connection emotionally with another person is beyond their ability to maintain. So they are always focused on that. And what typically then the wife does is she tries to get her husband to change those things. But you can't do that. So what you have to do in order to break these rules in the family is you have to tell the children the truth. You have to tell them, Daddy's mad right now. Let's leave him alone. We're not going to go and fix him. We're not going to try and please him. We're going to go mind our own business and go do something else. So that children get an awareness that this is not normal behavior, and this is not behavior you're going to participate with. And that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's hard to do because when you're married to someone, obviously some part of you really loves them and you want this relationship to work and to be a different kind of relationship. But I mostly tell people that's not going to ever happen. So you have to face and accept the fact that this person can't do it. And in the case of narcissists, they don't want to do it because that makes them uncomfortable and anxious. So you're going to have to raise the children on your own.
I think one of the problems is that when you're dealing with a narcissist in the beginning, they know how to just charm you to make you feel loved, to make you feel like you're the most important person in the world, which, you know, when you look in retrospect, it's, you know, part of their, you know, strategy in getting you. And
Yeah. You
keep leaning back on thinking, like, why aren't things like that anymore? And so you keep running around in circles trying to fix it to make it be like it was when you started. But wouldn't you say that was just an illusion they were creating? It wasn't the reality of the situation?
It's totally an illusion that they create. That's the only way they're going to get a partner. And you and I have talked about this, and that narcissists, in fact, are really looking for someone who will do it their way and be entranced by all of their attention. And if they can hook you and get you committed, married, and then have children, then they're pretty sure you can't leave. Because they're mostly afraid that you'll leave. They're not afraid that you won't love them. They're afraid you'll leave.
Mm-hmm. So when you have children who are in these you know, marriages, you know, like you say, the effects of borderline parent on their children, that they describe the impacts on children of a borderline parent. Children tend to internalize the low self-esteem of the borderline parent, which can lead to an overall feeling of hopelessness and depression. Children see the continual unhappiness of the parent, no matter what the child does to try to make them smile, and they begin to feel they can never make the parent happy. They feel inadequate and lacking, and they may even feel guilty for being happy around the borderline parent. They learn early they can't trust the parent's moods or reactions, so they're often in a state of stress and anxiety around the parent. I think that's also true for the being around the parent who's the empathic parent who's continually unhappy in the situation. Don't you feel the child also internalizes that unhappiness too?
They really can. And if the caretaking parent becomes depressed and anxious, children are going to pick up that energy. A lot of people tell me, well, I can't get divorced. I would like to, but I can't get divorced because I need to stay for the sake of the children. In this situation, the children are not being protected in that narcissistic family system. So you're staying not really for the children, and it doesn't protect the children. People have to really look at the reasons they stay and the reasons they are willing to leave the relationship. And everyone's situation is a little bit different. But when people say, I'm staying for the sake of the children, and they're in a relationship with a narcissist or borderline, I say, then you're doing your kids no good.
Exactly. That's what I say, too. I say, when your children grow up with dysfunction, they're going to carry that into their future relationships because that is their role modeling. That's what they learn.
That's exactly.
And if they
what
see
they
that you're
see
willing to
you,
do it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What they see their parents doing, how they see their parents communicate and interact is the pattern they see as normal. So they will go out and feel most comfortable in a relationship that's just like yours.
And one time I had a member, she was very, you know, very emphatic about this. She had stayed in a relationship where there was not only a gay husband, but a lot of emotional abuse, but also a lot of physical abuse. He used to beat her. And she stayed, and stayed because she felt, you know, she had a child. She didn't want to break up the relationship. Well, when her daughter, you know, got older and she met a man, she got married, and the man did the same thing to her, to the daughter. And that's the day she walked out of that marriage. She said, you know what? I realize that my daughter is copying exactly what was okay for me to, you know, that I stayed with it. Now she's staying with it. I have to be the role model here. I have to be the mother, and I have to say, you have to walk away. You know, and that's exactly what she did because she couldn't deal with the fact that her daughter was being abused. And I always tell my women, you know, to gauge it this way. When you take a look at your marriage, if you have a daughter or a sister and you love them that much, and they would come to you and say, Mom, I'm going to marry somebody just like Dad or just like your husband, what would you tell them to do? And in almost all cases, they say, I would tell them run in the other direction. So I say, well, if this is what you want your child to do, why are you staying? You know, I try to bring it down to some kind of reality like this.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not good enough for your child, why do you think it's good enough for you? But I think that old theory that staying in a family unit is what you need to do to have a successful family, that needs to change because I don't feel that's going to really be the answer for many of these families. I think it's going to be a disaster. So even though divorce is hard, is necessary.
Yeah, it is a disaster when one person is so emotionally dysfunctional as narcissists and borderlines are. Because they cannot participate at an equal level. They can't communicate effectively. They can't problem solve. They have emotional outbursts. None of that works to make a family function properly. And it provides a model for children that just leads them down the same road of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. You talk a little bit in your book about when the borderline parent, you know, finds a favorite amongst the children. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Finds a what? Say again?
That they favor a child over the other ones.
Oh,
in other words.
Yeah, that's incredibly common with narcissists. They will have a favorite child. And that favorite child does not benefit from that. In fact, the favorite child ends up oftentimes being the most damaged child. The favorite child is expected to please and respond to the narcissist, sometimes in almost almost like a spousal relationship. They want that attention from the child, and they want the child to be just like them. And they have high expectations and often pressure that child to be perfect. It's very damaging to the child in the long run. And the other children who are not favored or who are scapegoated are equally damaged because they're rejected and they're always found wanting, and they never get the kind of attention and gifts and special treatment. And so then they feel there's something wrong with them, too.
So in reality now, is it fair to say that many women are going to have children who have similar qualities that their father has?
Well, because it's mostly inherited, what you see is about one, if you're going to have three children, you're going to have probably one child who has a larger number of those characteristics, another child that is a caretaker and is highly empathetic, and another child that's kind of halfway in between.
And the child that's halfway in between, can that child be saved?
Child that's halfway in between is actually ends up being the most functional, because they're not being treated as a special child. They don't have the extreme emotional reactions. They are able to function. Oftentimes, they become invisible in the family. And we encourage parents to help their children have activities and experiences outside the family and with other families so that their children can blossom in the areas that don't get reinforced at home.
We were talking earlier about how people who have narcissistic personalities actually kind of target women who are empathic women. Would you say that's true?
I know it's true. I've seen it over and over. I experienced it myself.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about that and what women can do to try to make better choices.
There was one research done quite a while ago saying that most people make a decision about whether they're going to like or be interested in a person or not within the first minute to 3 minutes of meeting them. So you've got to be ready. A big part of this book is about how to make yourself more resilient as a parent. Things like not feeling, letting go of your shame and your guilt for not being perfect, for not being the be-all and wonderfulness on a pedestal person that the narcissist made you think you were at the beginning, how to let go of your fear of being close to someone, how to set boundaries one of the things narcissists do, I'm not sure that they're totally aware of it or not, but they ask you to do things you don't want to do to see if you will. And a lot of women think, oh, well, you know, I wouldn't normally do this, but he asked me, so yeah, okay, I'll give it a try. No, you don't want to do that. He's testing to see if you'll go against what you would normally want to do.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have a strength and a determination about who you are and how you see yourself and what you want in a relationship, then you're going to be much more vulnerable. You need
to
have a strong
tendency
enough
to keep. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, do you see a pattern where they're constantly blaming you for what is wrong in the marriage, even when it has nothing to do with you?
Absolutely. They blame you for absolutely everything. And everything they accuse you of doing is exactly what they are doing. And this is a rule of thumb for all narcissists. If, you know, you're in the relationship and you see your husband being really negative and depressed, and then all the time he's telling you you're negative and depressed. Don't fall for that. Tune in and notice that's what he's feeling. He doesn't have a clue what you're feeling. Narcissists do not understand what you're feeling. They know what they're feeling, and they tell you you're feeling their feeling because they actually feel as if you're one person. And the one person isn't you. The one person is them.
Can you explain the difference between a narcissist and a sociopath?
A narcissist, one of the biggest differences is a narcissist wants to be in a relationship, wants to be often in a family, wants to have people there with them. And they're willing to give up some small part to take care of that. Often it's a part that will make them look good in the community, like they have a good job or they work in their church or they're doing things that make them look like really good family people. Sociopaths don't care. They don't care if they're in a relationship or not. They have a goal, and usually the goal is to get sex or money. And when they get it, they leave. The thing about narcissism and sociopathology is that it's on a continuum. There's a book about magnetic attraction between caretakers and narcissists, and talks about how the more narcissistic the person is, the more caretaking their partner is. So some people have a little bit of narcissism. In fact, we all have some narcissism. It's part of our survival mechanism, the desire to take care of ourselves, to make decisions, to enjoy things, to reach our goals. Those are all a normal level of narcissism, of thinking about ourselves. But then people can go all the way up to the continuum where we would call them narcissistic, where their whole focus is on arranging their life so everything works the way they want. Sociopaths are even beyond that. They don't really care about arranging life. They have one goal, and that is to get what they want. And they don't care at all if you get hurt in the meantime. So there are probably some of the spouses of the people listening here are perhaps more sociopathic than narcissistic. But I think it's not as important to identify it with a label as much as to look at the behaviors and ask yourself, does this feel loving? Does this feel kind? Are my needs and feelings being considered? If that's not happening, you're not in a good relationship.
You make one statement here that I think really epitomizes everything and kind of sums it up. You say, you can end up feeling you have no voice and no power in your own home. And I think that really says it. I mean, when you feel that you don't have a say, that you're just being controlled, and that everything you're doing, you know, you're just trying to keep some control in the situation for not having the other partner get angry, start yelling and accusing you of things. You're constantly walking that tightrope, or what they call walking on eggshells, always afraid that when you crunch down once too hard, you know, it's going to pop up and all of a sudden all the yelling starts and the accusations. And I just find it so debilitating. I mean, I lived like that, and I just don't know how people can spend 10, 20, 30 years doing this because they're just so broken down. So how do you survive in this kind of a house? How do you protect yourself? What would be your best advice?
Well, the same as yours that you just said, and that's get out of there. If you are being harmed in a relationship, there is really no point to stay. But if you have children and you don't have a job and you've been isolated, it may take you a while to be able to readjust yourself, gain strength, and make a plan and get the finances to leave. And if you leave and have children, you're still going to have to interact with that person on an occasional basis. However, a lot of people who divorce narcissists can't seem to let them go. You know, they're divorced, but they keep worrying about their ex-partner's feelings and what they want. And, you know, this will make them upset or whatever. People let them in their house. They keep exchanging emails and text messages and follow each other on Facebook and Instagram. If you get divorced from a narcissist, you want to not interact with them any more than you ever, ever have to, because they will always treat you the same and they will treat you worse.
I can't say anything because I'm really guilty of everything you're saying. And I don't even, I'm being honest with you. I was really bad at this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I always tell my women, I'm not a role model. I'm definitely not a role model when it comes to this. You know, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know what it is within me that I had to keep that need of keeping up that caretaker relationship even long after it was over, and certainly with someone who tried to destroy me, and just feeling the need to, I could always fix it. You know, feeling bad. He came from a bad family. You know, he didn't have the right upbringing. You know, if only he had love and security, he would have turned out differently. You know, I just didn't understand what I understand now. You know, of course, now it would be different because I understand there's nothing I can do to change it. And that all of it was just manipulation on his part. But it's very hard to accept that.
It is very hard, and when I work with people, I'm always waiting for that turning point when they accept the fact that this is the way the person is, not just what they're doing, that it's not going to change, and although the person can act nicely some of the time, that's never a guarantee, and it's not going to be an ongoing situation. Being able to accept what you have done in your relationship, who you've chosen, how you've responded, accepting the fact that you have caretaken someone at your own expense and maybe even at the expense of your children, you have to come to terms with that without guilt and without too much remorse. Simply saying, that's what I knew then, this is what I know now. and move forward from that.
One of the women in my group posted a problem she was having that I shared with you about her daughter who needed counseling. And, you know, she was on the phone with the counselor and the father's there, you know, trying to listen in and trying to have his input in it. And the daughter, you know, was very upset by it. You know, she was a young child. And, you know, she's only 6 years old. And here she's trying to talk to a counselor, but the father keeps interfering and he's yelling on these, you know, how should she handle this?
Well, you did share that with me. And my first question is the father living in the home? If he doesn't live in that home, then he has no right to be there and the mother needs to keep him out of the home. I'm surprised at how many people separate, they're getting a divorce, but they allow the other parent back in the house.
Uh-huh.
You shouldn't do that. It traumatizes the children. The children need to know that the house without him is safe.
Uh-huh.
And so that would be one thing. If he's living there, then I would suggest that the mother talk with the counselor and take the child somewhere and do phone counseling rather than on Zoom, where the father can get a hold of it. So they can go in the car, they can go to a park somewhere, and not tell the father when the appointment is. So you need to think through the steps you can take to protect your children from those kinds of experiences. Because after they're underway and dad is yelling and pounding on the door and demanding to see the therapist on Zoom, it's out of control. If it was in their office, the therapist has a door and they shut the door. And it's pretty well protected from someone barging in. So it's right now a very difficult situation for a lot of people.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
The same
with
thing
COVID,
could be happening.
Yeah,
same thing can be happening with a mother if she wants to do some counseling with a therapist. She has to find some safe place to be.
Your new book, as we mentioned, and if you're listening to this show, then you can see it on the little site here, Raising Resilient Children with a Borderline Narcissistic Parent. And there's all these different strategies for protecting your children. And I feel this is so important for women to read, because even if you take away one or two little tips while you're in the situation, whether you're living with your spouse now because you can't get out at this moment, or you're on your way out but you're not out yet, you know, even when the relationship is over, you're still going to have to deal with all these personality disorders and all the manipulations that he's doing. So that's why this book is really of essence whether you're in your marriage or out. And in addition, Dr. Felsett has two other wonderful, groundbreaking books, Stop Caretaking the Borderline or Narcissist, How to End the Drama and Get On with Your Life, which was really a groundbreaking book as far as helping women understand what they're living with. And then your next book, Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, A Caretaker's Guide to Recovery, another excellent resource for women now who are on the road to recovery so they don't fall backwards. Do you feel that the road to recovery is a long road when you've been living with a narcissist for a lot of years?
Oh, yeah. Even in a normal marriage, they say it takes half the time that you've been married to recover and to get back to who you are as a person. So if you're married 10 years, it'll take 5 years. With situations where you have been in a relationship with a highly dysfunctional person for a long time, that means that you've also participated in a dysfunctional interaction for that period of time. And it's going to take you a while to get yourself out of that pattern. We suggest constantly having friends and support people and other people that you talk to and interact, that you have a job outside the home, that you do not sit and percolate in that dysfunctional, narcissistic family system, because it is not based on reality and it can really distort your thinking and your feeling responses. So the first order of business is always to increase your own sense of resilience. Resilient people have a strong sense of self, and they have an ability to set boundaries, to communicate clearly, and to problem solve. And if you've been in a relationship like this for a long time, all of those are going to be difficult. So you have to practice and you have to get support in relearning to do those things. Or if you came from a family which was dysfunctional, like I did, then you have to learn them for the first time. And that takes you longer. Yeah. But as soon, when a parent knows how to do these things in a healthy way, they can teach their children to do it. And even if your child has inherited some of these predispositions of overreactivity and difficulty empathizing, you can teach them to do that if you start teaching them from the time they talk. So many parents don't pay any attention to what they're teaching children until their children become teenagers. And it's too late by then. You have to start immediately telling your kids the truth, communicating directly, listening to their feelings, validating their point of view, setting boundaries with them, teaching them how to take care of themselves, not other people. Those things, you can start learning at 2 and 3 and 4 years old. And you can make a huge difference in your child's life.
So let me just ask you this. Are you currently working with clients? Can they come to you to work with you? You know, through
well, they
Zoom
can
or
come
telephone?
To me.
Not personally come to you. But.
Yeah. I do phone consultations, and okay. I do work with people. I don't do long-term work. I do a lot of education and teaching people to change their perspective and giving them the information they need to make sense of what's going on and help them build from there. I've had a few people ask, well, you know, I'm going to court and I need somebody to testify for me, and I certainly do not do any of that. During COVID, I've been talking to a lot of people because families are shut down. They're locked into their homes. They have very little access to other people, and even their kids are there at home trying to learn, and the stress and the pressure in homes like this have gone skyrocketing. So doing everything you can to take care of yourself and have support is really important, and I'm happy to help with that.
And I do have your website listed here under margalistherapy.com. That, you know, they can get in touch with you through that. But also, I think a really good place to start is by buying the books, because those women who have read your books have come to me and said, everything makes sense. Finally, I understand everything. I think the most important thing that I've gotten out of your books is that a personality disorder is not going to change. It's not going to get better. It's something that, you know, was in a person that no matter how much you want it to change, no matter how hard you keep running around in the circle of crazy, as I call it, you know, you run around and around and around to try to make something work, it can't work. I mean, if the person is who he is, he's not going to love you more because you do things differently. because he's not capable of that. You know, love is not something that...
That's right.
They can call it love, and they do, but they don't even understand what that word means. It's just a control issue, that they want what they want who they want, and, you know, unless you can recognize this and realize that it can't change, they are not going to get better, and it's just going to keep knocking your self-esteem down. So you need to do something to build yourself up so that you have the strength to make the moves you have to make. And I always tell our women that you first have to be emotionally free before you can be physically free. I understand you can't walk out the door that day. Many women just can't do that. But you have to put yourself in a state of mind where emotionally you're not going to keep being sucked into this, where you have to say, I need a game plan. If it takes me 6 months or it takes me 6 years, I'm going to be free of this, that I don't want to stay here, that I have to find a way out. And I think that that has to be the starting point. Would you agree, emotionally, to accept that this marriage is not working?
That is really the key, is accepting that it is what it is. And I say to people, what would it take for you to change your personality into theirs? And they go, I could never do that. And that's how you can understand they can't change their personality into normal. They're stuck with it just as much as you're stuck with you. The difference is people who don't have a personality disorder like narcissism or borderline can learn and practice and make changes in how they come across, how they communicate, and how they feel about themselves. They can make huge differences. It does take time and it takes a lot of work, but you can do it. People with a personality disorder, it's called a disorder because they can't seem to make a real change out of it.
And no matter what you do, there's no medication for this, correct?
That's correct. They can give people medications for anxiety and depression, which most borderlines and narcissists also have, and that can help them. But it doesn't change their personality, just like medications wouldn't change your personality.
Well, it may change my personality, but it certainly wouldn't change who I am.
Exactly.
Maybe I'd be bonked out.
Let's change
not
how
be
you
able to be me.
There you are.
Yeah.
They have not come up with any medications that really make a significant difference with these disorders. And I'm not saying that they won't, because they're doing lots and lots of research on how the brain functions. And these disorders are called processing disorders. That is, different parts of the brain don't seem to be able to communicate with other parts of the brain. And so far, we don't know how to fix that. But I'm hoping at some point, probably 20, 40, 50 years, we'll be able to figure that out.
And I think the most important lesson to be learned is that since these disorders are not going to change, you can spend all your time sitting and talking to the wall, because as you're talking to people who have these disorders, they don't hear what you're saying. They don't agree with you. They're protecting themselves they think you're wrong, right?
Yeah, they don't even understand the words you're using. When you say,
exactly,
I want to connect, they don't know what that means, because they've never actually connected with another person. That's one of the things that they can't do. So you can talk about it all day, but it's like describing life on Mars. Doesn't make any sense to them. Yeah.
So, Dr. Felstead, I can't believe our hour's over so fast, and I really appreciate so much being here. And I'm hoping maybe you'll come back in the spring again so we can discuss further the progress that we're making with your book, with some of the tips
wonderful.
That we're going to be trying to follow. So thank you so much. I appreciate everything you've done for all of us and continue to do. Ladies, I will be here with you next week for the holiday rush. Thank you so much for listening. Love to all of you, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Good night, everybody.
Mm-hmm.